You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
All right, it's true. I can't handle the truth. Friends and family are losing their jobs and their self-respect. Even German billionaires are throwing themselves under the trains.
This is the Radio Eco Shock Show with Alex Smith.
It used to be so easy here out on the edge. Nobody took the truth seriously. Economic doomsayers were just nuts then. Now, well, they dominate primetime TV. In last week's Radio EcoShock show, I did a feature on tools for tough times. Now I open up a blog on Wired magazine, and they do the same thing, except their list includes an Apple iPod instead of my axe and shovel. In just a few minutes, we're going to three features on the biofuel mess. I know how boring that sounds. That's what I thought, too. Then I get audio that turns our cozy green vision right upside down. It seems the big agribusiness corporations couldn't make enough monopolizing the world's food production. They decided to become energy giants, too. Wearing green overcoats, they stomped into the last remaining reserves of biodiversity, hacking it all down to grow palm oil and the soybeans we displaced with corn ethanol. Did I mention this great green rush may have caused the hottest year on record in 1998? You'll hear how tiny Indonesia passed the world's largest carbon polluters, including the United States, in a climate-tipping tsunami of greenhouse gases, an orgy of emissions. We'll hear voices from the Amazon and Asia, where biodiesel production has replaced food for indigenous people. And Dr. David Pimentel of Cornell University explains how we use a gallon and a half of ordinary oil to produce a gallon of ethanol. It's just a bubble, folks, a magic machine that transmutes oil into taxpayer subsidies and dead zones on the coasts. President Bush made so-called biofuels boom. What could go wrong? First, I want to get you a bit of news that gets buried. Here's a surprise. Carbon emissions to the atmosphere are still going up. Last summer, Kevin Anderson from the Tyndall Center told a stunned conference that carbon dioxide emissions were rising faster than anybody predicted or feared. He thought it improbable that levels could be kept to 650 parts per million, the doomsday scenario. That means at least a 4-degree centigrade rise average, and likely the tipping point at which ancient climate-shifting mechanisms take over. I'll get back to all that in a minute. Governments are doing absolutely nothing about it. Two European groups, German Watch and Climate Action Europe, have measured the Climate Change Performance Index. It shows which countries are actually trying to save the climate. Sweden, Germany, and France are top in the ranks, while the U.S. comes in 58th. U.S. emissions are up 20% since 1992. Canada's are up more than 26%. Canada is the 59th worst performing country, second only to Saudi Arabia at 60th. On the positive side, some OPEC countries are cutting oil production, trying to get prices back up. But the drop isn't enough to stop spiraling carbon emissions. Still, Goldman Sachs analysts say the low price of oil may halt development on expensive sources like Brazil's Tupi, billed as the largest oil find in the Americas since 1976. Also endangered are other deepwater drilling projects around the world, including one off Angola. Development of Canada's oil sands is also slowing, but not stopped. The Norwegian companies Statoil Hydro and Royal Dutch Shell have put off investments in Canada's tar sands. Aw, too bad. There's a lot of debate about the cooler weather in the Northern Hemisphere this year. Climate deniers say, well, that's it, it's the coming ice age. I just saw Lou Dobbs on the infamous CNN looking very wise. As he explained, the melting glaciers around the world are not from us, but from sunspot activity, a theory long ago thrown out by scientists who investigated it thoroughly. Television loves the car ads so much, they'll spit out anything. To show the depth of interdependence of television and auto advertising, here is a clip from a press conference given by the National Auto Dealers Association.
Chrysler President Jim Press reminding local television reporters even their jobs are at risk if Congress doesn't okay this multi-billion dollar bridge loan.
Who'd buy the advertising for you to be standing here taking pictures? The auto industry is the majority buyer of advertising in America, the capillaries in the economy worldwide.
Get it? If the big three go bankrupt and the Asian companies can't afford to advertise, commercial television networks may disappear. What a shame that would be. Think of the propaganda we'd miss. Oh, wait, the government would nationalize TV, too. Knock out the middleman, those wise corporate heads like Rupert Murdoch, and, well, get your government pablum directly. Although non-commercial stations worked out sort of okay in the UK, Canada, and other countries, it's not the end. At least you don't get 10 minutes of commercials every half hour. Back to the winter storms. We don't really know what caused this burst. It is compatible with scientific predictions in one way. The appearance of extreme precipitation events can appear as rain, or if the temperature is cold enough, as snow. It's happening now. Most of the media is blaming the storms on the appearance of the Pacific Ocean cooling phenomenon known as La Niña. Last April, NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab rats announced that the Pacific has entered a 10-year cool phase after 29 years of warmer currents. The ocean has oscillated between those states for a very, very long time. The combination of La Niña with warmer currents in the Atlantic may lead to drying in parts of the South America and the American Southwest, but more rain and flooding in the Pacific. Planting in Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines could be affected. Weather instability may add to growing world hunger. Our friend on Climateer Investor Blog says, folks, maybe we should start thinking about rebuilding our grain reserves. My thoughts, exactly. Despite the snowstorms in North America and Europe, 2008 ended up in the top 10 warmest years, according to various climate centers. Remember, we were talking about the global average temperature, which includes the other hemisphere we so seldom hear about. Even here in Vancouver, we had one of the warmest Novembers on record. 2008 is likely one-tenth of a degree cooler than last year. Back when Bill Clinton was inaugurated, the 2008 average of 57.9 degrees would have been the warmest year on record. That shows you how far we've come.
Our duty to the human race is clear.
As you heard in our two interviews last week, papers presented at the American Geophysical Union conference in December show climate change is hard upon us, no matter what the doubters say. Here are two clips from a speech by Dr. Graham Pearman of Australia.
We got a big surprise after the IPCC report last year when the aerial extent of sea ice decreased in 1 year by 20%. That was not projected. But the biggest surprise is that all the five-year ice and older, all of the old ice, the thick, resilient ice, is gone. This led the Ice and Snow Institute in Boulder, Colorado, to conclude in May that there was not a zero probability that we would lose all the ice this year, whereas the IPCC report last year said it would occur most probably in 2050. Now, I'm not trying to scare people. I want you to realise we don't know everything, and we have to manage the risk that, in fact, these changes could take place much more quickly than we anticipated. The first issue, and you should be clear from the science slides that I've just shown you, that not everywhere on the planet is going to be impacted the same. And, in fact, not in every area of the planet are we as certain as we are in other areas of what is going to happen. So it's a very inequitable distribution of likely impacts. As has been pointed out, there are people leaving island nations now, not in 20 or 30 years' time, now, because the sea level's already gone up and destroyed their fresh water supply. So exposure to some of these things is now earlier for some people. It'll be very inequitably shared across the planet. The second thing, as is pointed out, that we all contribute to this very differently. And if you believe some people who are trying to lay action on this, Australia's contribution is insignificant. We actually emit 550 million tonnes of carbon dioxide a year. The UK emit 750, not a lot of difference. Canada 850, France 450. All of these nations actually emit about the same. They can all put up their hand and say we won't do anything until someone else does it. It isn't a sensible way to look at this particular issue. Of course, the US and China are around about 6,000, and what they do is important, although some of you all read recently that some of the states now are taking some very proactive action in the US, independent of their federal government. But the third point about this is that some of us are wealthy relative to the rest. And therefore we are going to be able to cope with some of this change better than others. So it is, as was pointed out, this combination of exposure being related to people who actually have very poor capabilities economically to really be able to cope with it. My own view, I think, is that this is going to be the hardest part of climate change to deal with. Dealing with these inequities in a world in which so much of our decision-making is really quite selfish. And I think that that's really what this the next couple of presentations will be about. How do we treat the reality of this science, given its certainties and uncertainties, in the framework of actually supporting the developing world and the movement towards a more equitable world? Thank you.
Find his presentation in Australia last summer on YouTube. Search for Pearman, P-E-A-R-M-A-N, and climate. A growing chorus of scientists think it is already too late to save the climate as we know it. Unless humans take over management of the atmosphere, that is geoengineering, my friends. One of the biggest worries, the Earth's covering of ice is disappearing. You have seen the comparison photos of various glaciers all around the world retreating or disappearing altogether. Even Glacier National Park may have no glaciers in just a few years. It's amazing. But now a NASA satellite can measure the loss of ice in places like Greenland and the Antarctic. The GRACE satellite is actually a pair of instruments which can determine changes in the mass below. As reported by RawStory.com, the latest data shows, quote, over 2 trillion tons of ice has melted since 2003. That's the headline to Google. The Environment News Network has the story as well. NASA geophysicist Scott Luthke told them, more than half of the loss of landlocked ice in the past 5 years has occurred in Greenland, based on measurements of ice weight by NASA's GRACE satellite. There have been many signs that Greenland is melting, instant lakes on top in summer, rumblings the size of earthquakes. Now we know for sure. The world's largest supply of ice on land is melting fast. It guarantees the sea level will rise, going way up, endangering major cities and crop deltas. Changes to climate and ecosystems as far away as the U.S. Southwest or even Australia could result from the loss of Arctic ice. The process may be irreversible. Here's a human side of that debate in a curious setting. One of the world's top climate scientists and modelers is Stephen Schneider of the U.S. A couple of years ago, Schneider found out he had a rare and deadly form of cancer. With little hope from existing treatments, he decided to apply the decision and risk models from climate to his own medical case. That resulted in a new approach to aggressive maintenance for cancer rather than a cure, and it has kept him alive so far. Here's a quick clip from Schneider's YouTube video, which is a 68-minute comparison of risk decisions for the world's climate and for himself as a man with deadly cancer. It turns out there are many parallels between his disease and ours.
So this is what Dr. Goy said. No standard therapy. Mantle cell lymphoma is the non-Hodgkin's with the worst outcome. I had to get it, right? No currently available curative therapy. Absolutely. So if you can't cure it, manage it. Risk management. Remember the risk management that I said about climate? You can't cure it. It's already too late. So let's manage it so we don't get the top end. Let's get the slots narrower that are really bad.
If you get time to visit this 68-minute video, you will appreciate why we need the mind of Stephen Schneider to keep us going. Over in Britain, the former head of the IPCC and now chief scientist for the UK Environment Department warns the world needs to prepare for a 4-degree centigrade rise in global temperatures. That means get ready for millions upon millions of climate refugees, countless climate-caused deaths, and possibly extreme shortages of food and water. Watson said, quote, we must alert everybody that at the moment we're at the very top end of the worst case scenario. I think we should be striving for 450 parts per million, but I think we should be prepared that 550 parts per million is a more likely outcome, end quote. Australia economist Ross Garnaut, hired by the government, also predicts future climate agreements will struggle to accept 550 parts per million as a goal. In Britain, the Independent newspaper carried an article on January 2, 2009 titled, Climate Scientists, It's Time for Plan B. They continue with the subheadline, Poll of International Experts by the Independent Reveals Consensus that CO2 cuts have failed and their growing support for technological intervention, end quote. Just like Steven Schneider, some scientists are now calling for a maintenance mode. They want geoengineering projects on a mass scale to protect us against the worst heating until we can transition our energy economy to some safe and renewable sources. Good God, we're back to fertilizing the oceans with algae blooms, as Russ George tried to do with planktos, or spraying ocean water into the air to create more cloud cover. Hopefully, the idea of launching a billion tiny reflective mirrors into space has died a quiet death. Anyway, the Independent newspaper surveyed 80 international climate scientists and found that 54%, quote, agreed that the situation is now so dire that we need a backup plan that involves the artificial manipulation of the global climate to counter the effects of man-made emissions of greenhouse gases. About 35% of respondents disagreed with the need for a Plan B, arguing it would distract from the main objective of cutting CO2 emissions, with the remaining 11% saying they didn't know whether geoengineering strategy is needed or not, end quote. I've heard these rumors and I've had emails from anxious scientists, but I didn't realize that more than half of them now favor geoengineering. Politics has failed. Our own social network has failed. We haven't really changed. The corporate system has failed. We are killing off the climate that supports us while continuing to shop at the mall. We still hope for a new car or a vacation getaway. This is Radio EcoShock. Light up your iPod or computer with tons of free green audio from our website at www.ecoshock.org. That's ECO, shock like an electric shock, .org.